Okay, here we are again.
Happy almost New Year, friends.
Happy almost New Year. It's New Year's Day or New Year's Eve, and we are feeling festive today.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're gonna do something we've never done before because it's what the people want.
They do. They're always talking about it.
It's true. Look, people love lists. And we get it. So we're gonna tell you our 10 best movies of the year each.
A crazy novel concept.
Yeah, we invented it. And yeah, it's gonna be fun. We didn't tell each other what each other picked. I'm sure there will be some crossover, and I'm sure there will be some surprises on both ends. So we'll see.
There's one that I know you have on yours that I cannot wait to shit on. But that'll probably be the only one. I don't know what you have outside of if you have Flow or something like that on your, you know,
sucker for animated. Flow was pretty cool, but she didn't quite make the cut. I put Flow in the, like, glad it came out category. You know, I liked it.
Yeah. I will say before we start, there are certain things that probably would be on this list that we have not had a chance to see. Speaking for myself, but probably for you, had I gotten to see Cronenberg's Shrouds or Mike Leigh's Hard Truths, I feel like I would have. I mean, who knows? They could suck ass, but I'm gonna guess. I'm gonna guess another.
And I haven't. I don't know if you did. You might have, but I have not been able to see O Canada either. So probably would be as well on both of ours.
We need to talk to a certain somebody about getting that.
Yes, I totally forgot. Peace in time. Yes. But yeah, there's lots of shit I haven't seen. Courtney Stevens' new movie. There's a new Coven movie. The list could go on. We could do an episode about the movies we haven't seen, but that's silly. So instead we're going to talk about our 10 favorites that we did see, which is very hard. Is it for me, in my opinion, it was actually a pretty fucking stellar year of movies. If you do the digging on the surface, it doesn't look like it is, but for me, this was really hard to pick only 10.
Well, yeah, it was kind of hard. There was something, I don't know. I like your optimism for the year. I felt like we should have been given more, but we'll get into those thoughts on our other episode, which will be on our Patreon. So if you want to, if you're a particular fan of our vitriol and hatred of things, you might want to go to that one because we're going to talk about the things that probably annoyed us most this year. But we're on a tight schedule now. We have a new management, so we have to get things done fast. So let's not keep the people waiting. They're dying. They're sipping their coffee. They're scrubbing their floor, listening to this shit. They want to know. So do you want to start?
Sure. All right. My number 10 for this year. It was hard to not make this two movies. You'll see why in a second, but I just picked one of them. Wong Bing continued his youth trilogy with Hard Times and Homecoming. Hard Times takes the number 10 spot. The first section of Youth, called Spring, from last year, I really liked, but understandably a lot of even Wang Bing people were like, I don't know, it seemed a little light as far as, you know, actually digging into things. Clearly he was saving it, because the second one, Hard Times, is a pretty incredible experience, and it's full of anger and rage and actually gets into a lot of the trouble he's had with censors and the people living there have to deal with all the time. Pretty incredible. If you are someone who can enjoy sitting through pretty long movies, I would recommend the whole trilogy now, especially because Spring, you know, it was pretty good, but these last two are pretty amazing, I thought.
I'm excited. I have it. I still haven't watched it, but I have it on I have it ready to watch along with GSNK's Caught by the Tides. Those are two that I'm. Oh, and I will also say, just because we're talking about Asia right now, still haven't seen the new Takeshi Kitano. I know I'm a piece of shit, but I'm gonna.
I haven't either. I ran out of time this morning. I tried.
Yeah, I was like, I'm gonna watch Kubi while I'm back home, but as being with your family turns out, as usual, it's Not that. So, but yeah, no, I'm excited for this one. I love Wong Bing. I wasn't crazy about Youth, but I don't think it was a. It's the same when people get mad when like Wiseman does like a, like a non-documentary. It's like it's different.
Yeah, well, this, I think, as I said, I should have trusted in him more because he clearly was like, yeah, I'm going to give you this one and then I'm going to lose some of you and then I'm going to really give you the goods twofold next year because Homecoming's very special as well. But yeah, hard times for the number 10. What's your number 10?
Well, number 10 is a movie that I saw with the fucking asshole that I'm talking to right now. We saw this together, and that is M. Night Shyamalan's Trap.
Right, I'm so glad it's on yours because I had to slice it.
Yeah, it wasn't originally, but I think back on it and I watched it again a second time this year, and I love that movie. I think it's I think it's really kind of signaling a special place that he's going. I wasn't crazy about Knock at the Cabin, but I liked Old an awful lot. And then yeah, Trap's my favorite of all of these. I thought it just crackled with such perfect craftsmanship. I thought it was beyond thrilling. It's nice to go to a movie and like see just thrills instead of grand ideas necessarily. Sometimes it's good to just like truly someone who knows the building blocks that someone like Hitchcock or Lang laid out for us. And again, it was cracklingly thrilling, but it was also, I thought, terrifically hilarious too.
Yeah.
And I just appreciate something that can be a thriller like that, but be this really kind of dark comedy satire. Like the scene where Josh Hartnett, the one I keep thinking of, which is so dark, but the scene where he kicks that poor girl down the stairs to distract the cops was such an audacious image and action from this year of cinema that I haven't been able to like get it out of my head in some way. But yeah, Trap was a fantastic time. So that's gonna be my number 10.
Love it. Yeah. No, that I'm fully with you, and we won't go off on a side tangent, but as you already highlighted, what he put on that screen was on purpose. The comedy's on purpose, the silliness is on purpose, and so is the truly macabre shit like you just mentioned. And
When the
I
girl like the oil explodes on her, it's just like
love that.
you laugh because it's the insanity of this whole thing, and it's cool to see someone operate in that register who can put you into that sort of how much a murderer would be getting off on stuff like that. That to me is the most Hitchcockian aspect of it, is that it truly lets you revel in like the delights of a psychopath.
I agree. Yeah, it's very like late era Hitchcock that doesn't get enough love. Not all of it, but the good dark comedies from there. Absolutely. Love it. All right. Number nine. This will bring up a theme that'll come up a lot today. We have a lot of filmmakers looking back on their careers and make
Boy, do we.
pretty grand statements here and there. Number nine is Joel Petrakis's Vulcan Isadora. This, I've talked about him a lot on the show. I don't need to go into it too much. I love his work, but as especially with this one, he really leveled up, I think. Even though I love all of them, this is a very different filmmaker than any of the other ones that he's made. I think it's in a great way. He's matured incredibly, and he's a father now, so that comes with it. But he's done the thing that I love where you mature incredibly, but you don't lose the great things that were already a part of your filmmaking toolkit while you're maturing. So instead of losing them, he just hones them even more. So yeah, I don't know. I couldn't recommend it more. It made me laugh a lot, made me cry a lot, and then by the end, I just couldn't speak for a while. It's a really, and he does a, I won't spoil it, but he does a really, really audacious timeline for the movie where what you think the movie's going to be about it very quickly is not about that at all, and the length of time he does leading up to that and then how much time we have after I think was a pretty bold swing, and I think he pulls it off. And of course Joshua Burge as always is just fucking incredible.
Well, you know how I feel about stuff like Relaxer and
yeah. Well, I thought you'd be happy this one didn't have any gags like the milk or anything particularly gross with food in it. So I thought you'd be pleased on that
front. I did. I it didn't make my top 10, but I actually liked this. Yeah. So I dug it. He's a very interesting filmmaker, and it was nice to get to chat with him briefly in October.
He's a good dude. He's one of us, and everything he's been circling the drain with his whole career, he really, really fucking nailed it this time out, I think.
Okay. All right. My number 9, what the fuck is it going to be? Oh, I know that Will likes this bitch. It's Catherine Breillat's Last Summer. It's nice to have the Dark Queen back in this way. I'm going to start by saying oftentimes I have a problem with a lot of stuffy French dramas of the modern ilk. I find them too French. These French people love just being French. It's like, for fuck's sake, it's what made me hate our true queen, Claire Denis, Both Sides of the Blade. I thought that was a movie totally beneath her, but her most French film to date. And this movie, certainly some of the actors, like the kid, do certain precious sort of traits that I find quite annoying and very emblematic of modern French cinema. That being said, more people need to make movies like this. Like, there's no other way to look at it. In a world that's probably being choked by shit, like, haven't seen it, but Baby Girl and all this fucking crap. Maybe Baby Girl rocks, and I'll be telling a girl, good girl, one day. But right now, we have Last Summer, and Catherine just, goddamn, she does it like she always does it. And, there's a weird dark moral to it in that ending that our reliance on escaping problems through sexual escapades usually has sometimes, especially in French cinema, repercussions. But it's just daring in the way that she can do and just pokes so many holes in all the things, especially in this modern era that I'm thankfully we're coming out of, but that post 2018, let's dig into our morals so far that we don't even understand where we are. This is the kind of shit we need to return cinema to, the place of answering these questions or asking the questions, maybe not answering, but, I felt renewed by a plot line this daring and expertly handled. The lake scene was just one of my favorite images of the year.
Well, that's why I think she excels so much at what she does, is because she's fucking steely-eyed. Because she, as an artist and as a human, is not only not scared of any of this stuff, she's only happy when she's looking it right in the face. And it shows in her filmmaking. And that's why I think a lot of movies like this, whether mainstream or otherwise, suck, is because the filmmakers themselves aren't sure how they feel or if they feel good or bad about talking about it. And she couldn't be more the opposite. Obviously, I love this. I also really liked something that she always does, I think, but especially in this one too, where she is just like, look, people who think the only things that should be celebrated in life are the happy moments are fucking idiots. It's all part of the same soup, and the terrible shit and the traumatic shit, all of it can be celebrated as well. And I don't mean her saying, yay, this rocks. I just mean her saying all of it's part of life. And that's how we end up doing what you were saying, looking away from this stuff and ignoring it, is when we just keep it in dark corners. And this would have been on my list too. It was on last year's, because I technically got to see it right in the tail end. Otherwise, it would have too.
It's a cogent reminder that we need things to answer the dark questions if we truly want to understand ourselves and not you know, the good things come sometimes from experiencing the bad things, and she's just well-rounded in that regard. But she's a bad person because she beat Rocco Siffredi off on set once, and someone saw it, and what a piece of shit that woman.
Yeah, get her out of here. Get her out of here.
I can't stand her. Keeping that actor hard because she had probably a long day shoot, and she's like, Jesus Christ, I gotta make my shot. Fine, let me just, you know, fluff him a little bit.
Well, they probably had a fluffer.
A director. That's called someone who gets shit done.
That's right. That's right. The fluffer was like, I'm uncomfortable. And she's like, cool, get out of the way. We're gonna get the shot.
He'll get hard when my weird ass comes over there and starts doing it. Yeah.
This is a great segue to another filmmaker who has been cast aside. And I'll be honest, we've talked about this. This is not someone I particularly gave a shit being cast aside because I don't actually think very many of their movies are good. I'm not that interested in them usually at all.
James Toback's latest. Let's hear it.
Yeah, James Toback is back. No, I'm so glad I snuck this in. But because I wasn't even going to worry about watching it, but I finally did. This is a movie called Dog Man.
Damn, I was hoping Dog. I still haven't seen Dog Man, but I was really hoping Dog Man would appear on your list.
Holy shit. I truly didn't plan to watch it. I knew I would eventually, you know, whatever. But yeah, and truly, since Subway, for me personally, I haven't been this excited about one of his movies. Dog Man is exactly the antidote to the scourge of superheroes we've had for 20 plus years. This is a movie that should not work at all. It should be intolerable, should be the dumbest, most eye-rolling shit ever. But of course, Caleb Landry Jones gives an amazing performance like always. And our boy pulls off making a relatively cheap feeling exploitation movie, but mixed with like really high drama soap opera and superheroes. And he pulls it off. And yeah, if people don't know anything about this movie, which I would recommend, because I thought I knew what it was about based on just the internet being mad that it existed before it came out, I would just not look it up because it's actually not about that at all. And it's a very beautiful story that, yeah, is in equal parts stupid and moving. And as soon as it ended, poor Jamie was so annoyed because she'd just woken up. And I was like, I'm going to go for like an hour about this just to warn you. Oh, so Dog Man. I can't believe it. Like I said, I think even the movies that are beloved by him, I'm not that into personally. I think they're fine sometimes, but this is what I've always wanted from him. Like that's why I bring up Subway, right? Because Subway shouldn't work either. And it's something that only he could have made. Dogman is firmly his movie. And I am very much here for it. And I can't wait for you to watch it.
Okay, I'm excited. I'm going to watch it now. I was not going to, but I will now. Okay. Number eight for me, the big boy, the big tubby wine man himself, Megalopolis.
All right. So glad that's on yours.
God damn. I feel so out of step with the rest of the world and their appreciation of this movie and probably some other ones we'll get to. But yeah, I mean, what can you say? It was astounding, hilarious. It was exactly what I wanted from Coppola at this time. Did we talk about this yet before, or have we not?
We never did because I hadn't got to see it yet.
That's right. Yeah, no, I mean, it's such a gonzo vision of the world, and probably, you know, along with, I think, the start of a theme that's going to run through my top 10, but it's... you know, it's the great maker of many classics tinkering with, I guess, elements that could only live in the future. And I think a lot of people found those visual elements ugly. I didn't. I thought they were quite beautiful and challenging. And I guess I'm really missing how people didn't see the humor in this movie. It was one of the funniest movies of the year.
I agree.
And I feel that way kind of about Dracula as well. And even like One from the Heart. Like I think but this one especially has this really, really strange sense of humor that runs throughout it. The scene with the girl doing the virgin money raising number, highlight of the year for me. I haven't laughed that hard at anything this year. And genuinely, you know, it was like, clearly this guy knows this is funny. And Audrey Plaza's performance in that movie is, also one of my favorite performances of the year. I was so proud of her and Shia in that movie to go where they went. It was fearless filmmaking of the highest order. It's good to have the man back and just crafting things that with dialogue and stuff that just doesn't sound normal for a movie. But part of me wonders on some level what he's trying to forge with here. I mean, again, some of the dialogue feels kind of strange in this movie, but you know, that's not germane to his film, but it's certainly something that you don't see a lot in movies made in this era. And
especially not at this level, like this right. level of budget, you know, you don't get to see big movies where people talk like that very
often. Yeah. Small movies like Abel Ferrara films, but yeah. Not like this. I would just highly recommend people go back and recheck that one out if they felt kind of cold by it, because I think that's a really, really brilliant film and a really sad film about the future. And it just left me with a lot of ruminations, I should say. So two big
films. Totally with you. Also, I got one of my friends to like it because she's such a big Aubrey Plaza person. And she was like, fuck that movie. I hated it. And I was like, think about what you love about Aubrey Plaza, right? Her personality. Just think of that and then watch the movie. Because there's a reason that her and Francis got along so well, because they, I think, have a very similar sense of humor, which is a strong, strong sense of humor that doesn't care if other people see it that way or not. Right. That's, I think, part of the beauty of this movie and why it feels so weird. Because it's so big, because it feels like a small indie movie as far as its sense of humor, but instead we get it on this amazing scale. I watched it again and I'm just more obsessed. I love it. Yep.
Fantastic. Take us to number seven.
The next one, John's favorite movie of the year. Sorry to get to your number one so early, but this is Nathan Silver's Between Two Temples. Mm-hmm. similar to our boy Joel with Vulcan Isadora, I think this is another big upswing in a career. I'm a big fan of most of Silver's movies, but this one again I think was a huge level of growth. Of course he had a bigger budget than ever, so that's a thing, but as far as balancing his comedy with his tragedy, I don't think he has hit it this well since maybe Stinking Heaven, and I do think ultimately this one pulls it off even more. But I don't know, I haven't laughed like this consistently in a movie in years, as far as like a newer movie, right? Not going back on things, sure, but this one and the style that him and Sean Price Williams landed on, the way they shot this, I think works incredibly well. I understand why people don't like it, but they shot it, you know, like a run and gun 70s exploitation movie, which I think on paper is a stupid idea for a comedy. But to me, it works really well here. And the reason it works so well is because of when they knew to hold the shot on these amazing close-ups with, well, all the characters, but, you know, Schwartzman and Carol Kane the most. When they hold those close-ups and the world stops being so zoom heavy and so shaky and running around the room, those are the moments that hit so hard emotionally between the nonstop barrage of jokes, you know. So I loved it.
Can I ask, were you being tickled the whole movie and that's why you laughed the entire time?
Yes. Yeah, I hired people to tickle me.
Mm-hmm. And I have one other question, just last question about the movie. Do these characters come from a Jewish background?
Yeah, it might be in the title.
It's like, I couldn't. There weren't enough signifiers that they were wrestling with their Jewish identity. I needed more of that, honestly.
Well, I won't spoil it for people who haven't seen it. honestly, what they do with that, though, because that's part of the setup that I love, is the it's so front loaded with that stuff to the point of being obnoxious, that where the film goes and how it evens out is brilliant, I think. I really do. I get it. I really do get why you were turned off out the gate.
I like how it looks. I actually liked what...
I mean with the writing. Because yeah. I do think... And Silver's done this before, but I do think he makes the first 30 minutes or so like very antagonistic towards what you're talking about, where it's just so front loaded and so nonstop. To me, it works when it switches from that and we go in a different direction. But I really do. I get it.
Any movie where a guy is so self-loathing that he goes into a bar just to get beat up is like an automatic, I'm going to turn that off. Narcissistic ass like shit. But hey, you know what? I'm glad you.
If you do ever watch Where It Goes, I am curious what you'll think.
Okay. Well, yeah. Maybe I will. Maybe I won't.
Because yeah. I think, and don't, last thing I'll say, and don't get me wrong, I'm not comparing it to his movies, but I am comparing it to his sense of humor when he was at his most acidic. Hal Ashby, when he was really still, really angry, I think is all over this movie as far as the comedy, and especially where it lands. That's all I'll say. What's your next one?
Moving on. Let's get to something fucking real here. Here we go, baby. Yeah, there's some temples here. We're going to call this one Between Two Towers. No, maybe not. I don't know. There's some buildings in this movie. It's Twilight of the Warriors Wall.
Okay, I was like, what the fuck is this going to be? This is another, same as Megalopolis, I'm so glad it was on your list, because I slashed it in the end because I knew it would be on yours and we could still get to talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, this is... I will just say I am very happy that Hong Kong cinema is very, 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 very slowly getting back up on its nimble legs. I thought last year, what was it called? What was the Y Cafe movie from last year?
Like, oh shit,
Cops versus Dragons.
Yeah, we talked about it on the show.
Yeah, well, whatever. That was a good indication of where things were getting back into place. I think Herman Yao's latest Coast Guard Defense or something like that. These are all movies that just have a little bit of what you want, and you're like, okay, they're doing it. It's nice to see it. But this was the movie that felt like, is Hong Kong action cinema back? And I was so floored by this movie and what Soi Chung does with kind of this almost meta idea of the Hong Kong action movie, in that he returns the story to the era of those great movies, the early 80s, so much so that characters look like they walked out of all these other movies. And that seems
and
to be
smell.
And smell. Yeah. And you got Louis Q and Sammo Hung as the two warring bosses. Uh-huh. Like, how can you not want that? It was good. And also to kind of have some criticism of the mainland that I hope no one figures out there was criticism, even though that was pretty bold in that ending.
Pretty bold, because if you don't know about the Kowloon Walled City, I mean, we could talk about this movie probably for 10 episodes. We fucking love this movie.
A lot of history wound up in it that we are not smart enough, even have the time to get into.
But I was just going to say, if you don't know what that is, I would do a quick cursory, just catch yourself up real quick, just loosely on what that is and when it was, and then watch this movie, and it sings even more, especially knowing that Soi Chang grew up not in the city, outside the city. He talks about being scared to go, but they wanted to because the dentists were cheaper, I believe.
Totally. Well, that makes sense when you see the movie. I mean, and when you look it up and you see how the action plays off of this, I mean, it is just it's a city where every building is basically touching. So the idea of what you can do formally and with bodies and choreography and all that stuff is just, it's a truly a Hong Kong actioner's dream of possibilities. And it delivers all the pathos that you want from those movies, and just felt like, okay, like these action movies that are still the best action movies ever made, post, even post 70s on. It was a very welcome return to that. And Soi Chung is someone I know we both are huge fans of, and it was nice to see him do this after such a strange movie like, what was it, Mad Fate?
Yeah, I think that was the last one before
Was it called
this.
Mad Fate, or am I getting that mixed up with something else?
Yeah.
Hold
I
on.
get them crossed because I hadn't been as excited
Yeah.
for
Yeah, Mad Fate. Duh. I'm no
yeah.
fucking idiot over
Trust
here.
yourself.
I liked Mad
Trust.
Fate, but it was not this. And this was really
No,
something.
like Mad Fate's okay, I think. You know, like I think it's not bad or anything, but it's because yeah, it's because we had Limbo. Because we were stuck in Monkey King Hell between SPL2 and Limbo, which both are two of my favorites. And then Mad Fate, I was like, oh no. But then this one, we're back. We're back fully.
Yeah, SPL2, Time for Consequences also, and
yeah.
Accident and Motorway. I mean, those are all just, he's so underappreciated, and he's kind of the secret now, like, linchpin of the Milky Way family. This was not Milky Way, Twilight of the Warriors, and who
But it
knows?
feels like it in the best way. In that way you miss when you watch contemporary Hong Kong movies often. You're like, God, I wish that logo would pop up.
I think his mentor was very happy with this movie.
Yep. Agreed. Love this one. Yeah. Okay. Number five, right? Yeah. Number five for me, our boy.
Six.
Is that six? What did we do? One,
I don't know. Who gives a shit? Just go ahead.
four. Yeah, so number five, we're doing good. We're doing
Okay.
good. Number
Great. Awesome.
five, juror number two, our boy Clint Eastwood.
Never heard of him.
Never heard of it. Yeah, there's thankfully for once, and rarely do I say this, everybody's talking about this movie, and from what I've seen, most of what people are saying, I'm not even mad about. So I don't need to, break this down for you guys. I guess all I want to add to the conversation, we talked about it at length as well. So you can go back to that if you want, but all I'll add to the conversation on this one is that I think it's an oversimplification to just say, ah, finally, movies like we used to have them. I think
Oh, yeah.
Clint's doing a lot more than that here. And as we've been talking about, this is another artist looking back on their entire fucking life and career and the studio system and everything they've experienced and saying a lot about that, and also just about trying to be a fucking human being. And it's incredible. So yes, it's a throwback in some ways to, like, movies we used to have, but guess what? Most of those movies don't have any of what I just said. This movie is a lot bigger and grander than those, in my opinion. So if you want to hear more, we talked about it for a whole ass episode. So
Yeah.
hop back
Maybe I'll have something to say about it later.
to
Okay,
Number five.
my next one. Miguel Gomez's Grand Tour. A truly mesmerizing kaleidoscopic journey into space and time. Plot simply, a man is trying to escape his bride-to-be, and his bride-to-be goes looking for him. All you need to know to get yourself into this movie. I am so glad that he, as much as I liked that documentary he did on Portugal and then the Arabian Nights, those were great. Yeah, great. They were really good. This, to me, I mean, just besides the black and white and the kind of silent film techniques, this felt like my favorite of his, which is Taboo. And I remember when Taboo came out, that was like, I thought that was one of the greatest things of that time. And this is him getting to play truly with film history. And a theme that we're going to see is kind of the disappearance of movies. And maybe there'll be another movie on my list about a character looking for somebody, in the midst of all this kind of like sort of reverence about the cinema. Yeah, I mean, this is a perfect masterclass in light and shadow, dark con and light contrast, and it's as much as it is cool to see him play with Sternbergian sort of setups and all that. It's more cool to see the mashup between when the modern world comes in and he's doing these kind of like things set within, because it's like, well, I think it takes place in like 1917, but there are occasional lapses into the future, which just kind of felt like the timelessness of this story that may have existed in these spaces. And in a year where we talked about a film like Eureka, which I quite liked, I thought they're very similar, and kind of seeing the two, it kind of made me realize maybe how overworked parts of Alonso's film were, and how this one, I think, just had a better understanding and grappling of this kind of weighty idea that it's trying to get at. And yeah, I mean, just simple scenes like the scene where the woman who has a great kind of turn of this character midway through the movie, she's talking to a housemaid, and it just, I've never seen a movie get so close to kind of like looking like something like Todd Browning's The East of Sumatra, like truly like making it look like a film from the 20s. And besides that being a technical feat or whatever, it's not even that. It's the film stock on display in this movie, because even the modern scenes have a certain type of film stock that I don't know what it is, but it was really transporting to see movies look a certain way that they don't anymore. And just its complicated, kind of often funny story. And yeah, it's just what a kind of fantasia, a bittersweet fantasia of the disappearance of cinema. And maybe we just need to find it in our hearts. I don't know. But yeah, truly, truly beguiling film in the best way possible, I thought.
Well, here's your first surprise. That movie will be on a different list for me. Yeah, I was shocked as well. So much so that my rule, when I react really strongly in one way or the other, I like to watch something multiple times. After the second time I watched it, I felt exactly like you as far as visually. Couldn't have been more floored, and just nothing but respect for how they shot it, how the documentary stuff, found footage is worked into it, all of that. Absolutely obsessed. I, especially the second half, I fucking hate this story and found nothing in it for me. That'll be revealed more in what one of my tops later on will come up, though, because watching a movie that really lit me up about similar things helped me understand why this one didn't do it for me.
I know, if I guess what you're talking about, I see what you're saying, but maybe we'll spar over it when we, because I at first kind of felt whatever about this movie, and watching it again actually strengthened it for me. So I find that second half to be the better half of the movie.
That's what everyone that I trust that I've talked to about it feels the same. I have not been able to find it yet. But yeah, we can get into more on the Patreon. Things that came to mind during it from other filmmakers that made me like this less.
Agreed. All right. Well, let's take a break, because we have a new Zoom account that we don't pay for anymore. So we are going to take a break. This is going to be two parts, and we'll come back with the rest of our top 10.